Fertilizers are crucial for growing food, but how do they work? For this week's Food Fridays, Please Explain, we will learn what fertilizer is, how to manage it, and also about the important role that fertilizer plays in growing food to feed the world. Harold Van Es is professor in the Department of Crop and Soil Sciences at Cornell University, and he joins us now. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Okay, glad you're there. We also invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org, on Facebook, or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So, Professor Van Es, do all plants need fertilizing?
Well, that's a nuanced question.
I like nuanced questions.
Yes. Plants need food, like humans need food, and so those nutrients can be supplied naturally by the soil, but in most cases that is insufficient to grow the type of plants that we're interested in. And so then what we do is we supplement that with fertilizer, whether that's synthetic or chemical fertilizer or organic fertilizers like compost and manure.
Well, so the soil, is some soil more naturally fertile than other soil, or does it depend on the plant?
Soils are vary a lot. The more virgin soils, the natural soils, tend to be more fertile. And when farmers started to plant crops and remove some of those nutrients, and maybe also through process like erosion, then those soils become less fertile, and then they become more dependent on artificial fertilizers.
Well, what is in fertilizer?
There's many different types of fertilizers. Basically, the fertilizers have the nutrients that plants need, and there's three that they typically need in fairly large quantities, and that's nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So most fertilizers will be some combination of those three, or in some cases maybe only nitrogen or only phosphorus or only potassium. And then we have another class of fertilizers that provide what we more refer to as micronutrients, zinc and boron and chemicals like that, or nutrients, I should say, like that, that plants need in just very small quantities.
Does fertilizer affect the nutritional quality or taste of produce?
It can, and I think it's probably somewhat subjective. Some people believe that organic fertilizers, because they have the nutrients, but also bring in other beneficial effects on the soil. They bring carbon and support soil biological activity better. So that some of those so plants that are grown basically under those conditions would be a little tastier, and that that could definitely be the case. In some cases, we care more about that. For example, if we're maybe growing tomatoes or broccoli or Brussels sprouts that we directly consume. In other cases, maybe corn or soybean that gets fed to animals or some other way are part of a more industrial process. That's probably where it's less important.
Does fertilizer produce higher yields?
Yes. In fact, in many cases, we could not grow crops profitably if we did not use synthetic fertilizers. And even a lot of the organic fertilizers, like compost and manure, are indirectly derived from these synthetic fertilizers. We simply can't feed 7 billion people on this earth without using some of these synthetic fertilizers.
So you're saying that when I compost, I'm putting things into that compost that may very well have been grown with synthetic fertilizers. So even if I'm trying to avoid synthetic fertilizers, I can't really.
It's very difficult. Yes, you're correct. What you could consume and most likely is the result of synthetic fertilizers. And in fact, some estimates have shown that on the average, about half of the nitrogen that we consume and that is now part of our bodies as part of, say, proteins and organic structures like that in our bodies, that maybe half of that nitrogen actually came through a synthetic manufacturing process. Unless, you grow solely, where you eat solely organic foods, and then it will be much less, even though some of it will still be indirectly coming from synthetic fertilizers.
Has fertilizer use been around as long as we've had agriculture?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, in terms of the synthetic fertilizers, absolutely not. In terms of the natural fertilizers, yes, more or less. You know, when people started to farm the land, they initially relied on the natural fertility of the soil. But fairly quickly, farmers figured out that, especially manure from livestock, that was a good source of fertilizer.
In Japan, didn't they use human waste?
Yes, yes. Japan certainly, and in fact, there's kind of a resurgence of interest in the use of human waste in countries where nutrients are really a limiting factor.
And why does manure and other forms of animal waste, why does that work well for fertilizers? Does it contain nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium naturally?
Yes. Well, yes, yes, it does. I mean, when you think about it, these animals, they eat the plants. The plants, of course, have those nutrients. They extract some of those nutrients out of those plants as it goes through their digestive system. But a lot of those nutrients actually just come out at the back end and then can be recycled and reapplied to the land, where it then is absorbed by the soil, and then the soil feeds that back through the roots back into the plants. And so the nutrients on the older style farms until, you know, say the middle of the last century, basically were mostly being recycled.
But they weren't using compost, were they? What makes compost a good natural fertilizer?
Compost is not inherently much different than say manure. It's just that we tend to put maybe a wider variety of materials into compost these days, and the primary advantage is that you make the material more manageable. So if you're a composter, then you probably know that you put, say, a lot of food scraps in it, and then when it goes through the composting process, then you have a relatively small amount that's available. So it goes through a degradation process that would otherwise take place in the soil. If you were to put your food scraps straight into your garden, you would have a fairly similar impact.
Well, the worms often play a role in that transformation. What do they do?
Well, worms and many other critters, actually, spider mites and bacteria, fungi, they basically shred up the materials, let's say the food scraps in this case, and then other organisms then are able to use enzymatic reactions to attack and degrade and decompose those materials. It's actually, we refer to it as the food web. It's sort of a complex interaction of different animals, you might say, working together. Worms, they actually ingest some of this material, and then they make it into little aggregates, and so that's how worms make their contributions. But it actually is I like to say sometimes it's sort of a jungle down there. There's just lots of different animals, little critters that work together to decompose and recycle those nutrients.
And bacteria as well.
Bacteria especially, yes.
My guest is Professor Harold Van Es from the Department of Crop and Soil Sciences at Cornell University. We're talking about fertilizer on today's Food Friday, Please Explain. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org. You can write us on Facebook and on Twitter as well, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. I was told in school that Native Americans taught the pilgrims to put fish in the ground with their seeds. Was that fertilizing?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Fish, like any type of meat, accumulates those same nutrients. And by putting that then into the ground and allowing that to decompose in the ground, similar to a composting process, you then basically release those nutrients, and that is then food for the plants. Yes.
Okay, we've talked about the fact that there are natural and synthetic fertilizers. Can you explain the difference between them and how they work?
Yes, synthetic fertilizers basically are what we might say purely chemical fertilizers, the inorganic chemicals. While the organic fertilizers are basically things like compost and manure, or you might think of fish in the case that you just described, and they are basically, you know, from living things, and so they contain the nutrients, but they also contain a lot of other organic matter, a lot of carbon that can be beneficial for the soil. The inorganic fertilizers, synthetic fertilizers, are basically manufactured through some kind of a industrial process, and that varies quite a bit. Nitrogen, for example, is manufactured through a fairly energy-intensive process that takes the nitrogen out of the air. About 78% of the air, by the way, is nitrogen, which is, you know, we're just breathing it in and breathing it out, but it's inert. It's chemically not reactive. So this manufacturing process uses natural gas and a lot of pressure to then take this nitrogen out of the air and make it into what we call a reactive nitrogen that can then be used as a nutrient by plants. And similarly, phosphorus is actually manufactured from natural rock deposits that are high in phosphorus. Then they get treated with some chemical substances, notably sulfuric acid, and then they are converted into a denser grade, higher quality fertilizer material.
And then they get packaged under the name Miracle-Gro, at least for people who are trying to grow grass. Do farmers use something similar?
Well, farmers basically use the same types of fertilizer. Miracle-Gro is just something that is packaged and marketed for, you know, your average homeowner and gardener. And I mean, it's inherently not any different than the fertilizers that are used by farmers. They just use them in much larger quantities, you know, in bulk often, and also in very different formulations. You know, it can be liquid, it can be in a gas form, it can be pelletized, granular. There are many different forms of fertilizer.
Now, are they dangerous to handle, the synthetic ones? Because don't some people use them in homemade explosives?
In some cases that is a concern. The one that's most infamous, I would say, is ammonium nitrate. That was the primary explosive material in the use of the Oklahoma City bombing about 15 years ago.
Timothy McVeigh.
It was 1996. Yes, Timothy McVeigh, yes. And so basically he purchased a lot of bags of fertilizer and had it in a truck and was basically able to explode that. And I think most of us know what the consequences were.
Well, what makes it volatile?
It's not necessarily volatile. It's explosive. So and basically it releases a lot of energy when it's ignited. And because there's a chemical reaction that occurs. Now, I should, you know, point out that ammonium nitrate fertilizer is now certainly not in the pure form, is no longer being sold in this country for that reason. And so farmers use different types of nitrogen fertilizer.
Now, you talked about some fertilizers being pelletized. Manure is sometimes oven-dried and pelletized. Is it still considered natural when that happens?
Yes, it is. It's just a simple process of drying and pressuring it into, compressing it into pellets, but it's still a natural fertilizer at that point in time.
Are there efforts to make more natural and renewable ways to fertilize? I mean,
yes,
are we recycling human waste again? You said that is coming back in fashion.
Well, it's, you know, we're starting to get there, and small projects that are being initiated in places like Kenya, for example. We're somewhat involved in an emerging project that that uses the waste from latrines in some of the slums in Nairobi that are then being dried. They call it torrefaction, or maybe through a process where it's turned into biochar, and then can be applied to land. But it's relatively small scale, but people are starting to look into it. Of course, there's sort of a cultural aversion to using human waste. But similarly, we, of course, you know, New York City itself has, you know, all the sewage that's being treated and that's then being separated and turned into compost is also, there's also attempts to recycle those nutrients.
Let's take a couple of calls. Claire from Connecticut, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am investigating the use of corn gluten meal as a natural alternative to fertilizers, specifically to be used in a lawn application, a grass situation. And my concern is, having done a little research, is that it can, at the rate it needs to be applied, it is a heavy nitrate concentration, and I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the negative effects of too high of a nitrogen level, and also if you know anything about corn gluten meal. Supposedly it attracts rodents as well, so you know, you're trying to do something natural, but you end up creating another problem. So if you could speak to that, I would appreciate it.
Can there be too much nitrogen?
Yes. Well, thank you for the question, Claire. Yes, there can be too much nitrogen. In fact, that is a at the national scale is a tremendous problem, because we have the Chesapeake Bay, the Gulf of Mexico. There's problems with high nitrogen levels that creates anoxic conditions, low oxygen conditions, and fish kills and all that. It can also get in the groundwater if the groundwater is being used as, say, a drinking water source, and that's a concern as well.
But what about for the plants? Do plants thrive on as much nitrogen as they can get?
Well, plants need nitrogen, but if it's applied in excess, then it becomes an environmental problem. You know, the plants only need a certain amount. So what you want to do is you want to make sure that, in this case, if you have an organic source of fertilizer, you want to get an analysis of that, and maybe you already have that, and then you can see how much nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium and whatever else is in that material, and then you can apply that material based on, you know, what the recommendations are for that particular nutrient. So if a organic material is very high in nitrogen, like for example chicken manure, then you should apply it at a lower rate than if it's relatively low. But what you don't want to do is apply more than the plants can take up, because then it becomes a significant environmental problem, certainly if it's done on a large scale.
Claire was asking about corn gluten meal. Is that a good fertilizer?
I can't answer that question, because I don't really have enough experience with it, but again, the way you would get an answer is to have that analyzed and at a chemical laboratory. Or if you're in Connecticut, Claire, I think you were, then I would contact the University of Connecticut soil testing laboratory. They would be able to analyze it for you, and they would be able to give those answers to you.
Claire, thank you so much for calling us. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, take more of your calls. Our number here is 433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. You can write on Facebook as well, or reach us on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. My guest is Professor Harold Van Es, who is in the Department of Crop and Soil Sciences at Cornell University. And this is another one of our Food Friday Please Explains. We are back with Harold Van Es, professor in the Department of Crop and Soil Sciences at Cornell University. We're talking about fertilizer on today's new Please Explain, Food Friday Please Explain. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org, on Facebook, or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Let's take another call. This is John from Bronxville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Leonard and Professor. Well, I can tell you that you don't have to go to Japan to find people who still used, or very recently, until recently, were still using the human and animal manure system. I'm a city kid, but I'm the son of tenant farmers from Portugal, and they came from a rather rocky climate there, you know, and land. So they used every trick in the book, including, you know, they were too poor to buy the artificial chemical fertilizer, you know, factory made. So they did things like the manure, and also they used to plant different kinds of crops together. I think corn, I'm trying to remember now, corn, I think, planted together with beans and squash and also garlic, I think, in, together in a row. Then they seem to help each other out. I'm wondering if that would be considered a kind of a fertilization of, where they were mutually beneficial to each other.
Harold?
Yes. Well, John, thanks for asking. And also sharing that that experience of your relatives in Portugal, and I think probably in the past in the areas where, you know, plant nutrients were very limiting, that's using human manure was often a greater solution.
Could it ever cause any problem? Would it could it transmit diseases?
Yes. Well, you do have to be careful. Yes. So. Because there may be human pathogens that in that way get transmitted. So going through some kind of a composting process, especially a process where you raise the temperature, so good thermophilic composting tends to kill those pathogens, or otherwise if they're basically incorporated into the soil, you mix it into the soil, then you also really reduce the, because then the pathogens get kind of eaten up by all the other organisms in the soil, and you reduce that as well. But you still want to be very careful. You don't want to be applying human manure on crops, for example, that you're going to be directly consuming. But John also asked a question about the combinations of crops, and that's absolutely right. Traditionally, in fact, in this area here, in the northeastern United States, farmers have often used the three sister system that included corn, beans, and squash. And corn is basically a very tall grass, and it requires a lot of nitrogen. But beans are legumes, and they make their own nitrogen, and they can supply some of that also to the corn. So by smartly selecting different crops, you can basically provide nutrition to all the different crops simultaneously.
And you could also do it through crop rotation?
Crop rotation, yes. A typical dairy farmer, for example, might have alfalfa hay for 3 or 4 years, and then they rotate it into corn, and then the nitrogen that came from the alfalfa, which is, again, a legume that makes its own nitrogen, that nitrogen then supplies the corn for 1 or 2 years. And so that way you can provide that fertility for a subsequent crop.
Are organic farms required to use natural fertilizers?
Yes, they cannot. I mean, there's very strict regulations, and they're very detailed about what they can and cannot use. But they basically all have to be natural products.
Is it possible to use natural organic fertilizers like manure and compost on large-scale farms? Is there a big enough supply?
I would say that probably not. The organic farms currently can acquire those nutrients in part because there are other farms out there that use fertilizer. So some of the manure and compost that maybe comes indirectly from other farms, and sometimes even, you know, say feed that went to chickens, and the manure from that then gets applied to organic farms. With some, you know, restrictions. But in general, it would be very difficult to have all farms be organic because we would then have problems with having the nutrients. So currently, the organic farms to some extent benefit from the fact that there are non-organic farms around as well.
But also, we don't see as much crop rotation as we did in the past. That's because so many farms these days are just really producing one crop. Corn or soy?
Yes. If you go say to the Midwest, many farmers grow corn and soybean in rotation, or sometimes even continuous corn, and that's for economic reasons. But if you go to
does that make the soil more and more dependent on synthetic fertilizers?
Yes. Especially if you grow corn after corn, you need a lot of synthetic fertilizers. But there are other farmers, for example, if you go to an organic farmer, say here in upstate New York, they have very intricate rotations that allow, you know, one crop to take advantage of the benefits of the of another crop, and so they very carefully select rotations to reduce disease pressure, to make sure that nutrition is being provided. Say one crop provides nitrogen for the next crop. Also, there's concerns about weed control. So if you're interested in that, and there's some publications, and you look at the intricacies of rotations that an organic farmer uses, it's really quite impressive, and it's very interesting because they use all the ecological principles to optimize their system.
What are we seeing in the rest of the world? Are we seeing a trend toward monoculture, are farmers still using the traditional methods?
Well, it varies greatly, but of course, there's been a trend to larger commercial scale agriculture, especially in places like China, and you know, where there's a tremendous demand for food, of course. But we've seen it in many other places. But there's quite a bit of variability. I've been to many places where the system did not appear to be very sustainable, but there's other places where, you know, people use good rotations. And the scale of farming varies from very small, even here in the Northeast, we might have very small farmers that might sell produce, say, on a farmer's market, but also to very large. And you find in almost every part of the world, you find a variety of those farmers. Now, if you go to a place like Africa, in many countries, you still have a lot of subsistence farmers where a family is basically lives off the land of a relatively small area and basically supplies its own food.
Is it possible to turn non-arable land into farmland with fertilizer? For example, didn't Israel do something like that, creating arable land in the desert?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, the world has mostly run out of very productive farmland, and so in many places we're now starting to farm on what we call more marginal lands, and basically we either have to do that or we have to cut down some of the remaining rainforest, and which is also not very desirable. But in you know, Israel is somewhat of a unique place, of course, because it has its own food security issues. And so they have developed a lot of what you might call marginal land, mostly marginal because of it's very dry. But by using drip irrigation techniques and very advanced fertilizers, they are quite successful. In fact, they export some of their produce.
Barbara from the East Village asks, in my community garden plot, do I need different fertilizers for roses and tomatoes and trees, or can they all be fertilized with the same things?
They all have more or less, I mean, they all have fertilizer needs, let me say it that way. But, for example, tomatoes need relatively more nitrogen, like corn. So a fertilizer that's appropriate for tomatoes would be certainly slightly different than a fertilizer that's appropriate for trees. And if you go, for example, to the university recommendations, so if you live in New York, you would go to the Cornell University recommendations, and if you go to, say, the horticulture department, you find them on the website. They have recommendations for any type of crop. And if you live in Connecticut, you go to the University of Connecticut recommendations, et cetera. And they would be able to give you more detailed recommendations. But in general, I would say for most of the horticultural crops, the type of fertilizer could be the same, but the amounts at which you apply it would be a little bit different.
Because you can burn the roots?
Sorry, say that
again. I always heard you can burn the roots.
Well, yes, if you apply too much fertilizer, especially nitrogen, then it can burn the plant. Yes, you don't want to overdo it.
Kathleen from Red Bank, New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of questions for Professor Van Ness. The first one is, can you talk a little bit about the fertilizers and the problem with them with the ones used on lawns and farms with the runoff into the waterways?
In fact, I want to expand on that. New York State has a list of rules and guidelines on phosphorus fertilizer use in the state because of that. In New York, phosphorus lawn fertilizer cannot be applied within 20 feet of surface water. It may not be applied between December 1st and April. Again, to prevent runoff?
Yes. There's a considerable concern in this part of the world about phosphorus running off, especially into our freshwater lakes. Because these water bodies are what we call phosphorus deficient. That is that if that's the limiting nutrient, and if phosphorus enters into those water bodies, these beautiful lakes that we have, especially upstate, then that creates a problem, and that causes algal blooms and things like that. So what that is considered to be a considerable problem, and there are many sources. For example, detergents used to have a lot of phosphorus, but that was banned back in the 70s. And so the remaining concern is primarily with agricultural sources or, urban landscaping. And so the state does have restrictions, certainly as it relates to manure. So, for example, large dairy farms are regulated and they have to develop nutrient management plans. But recently, the state also put severe restrictions on phosphorus fertilizer use on lawns. And
this is New York, but is that happening in other states as well?
It is. I think New York is ahead of probably, certainly the vast majority of states. I'm not sure. It's possible that a few other states, maybe Maryland, because there's so many concerns around the Chesapeake Bay, they may have some regulations. And in some cases, individual municipalities. I know, for example, the city of Madison, Wisconsin, which is located on a couple of very nice lakes, they have problems with these algal blooms, and they have also banned the use of phosphorus fertilizer on lawns. And in New York, we also have a severe restrictions, not only in terms of the timing of application and the distance or proximity to surface water, but basically you're no longer allowed to apply phosphorus fertilizers on lawns unless it's justified by a soil test or, I believe, if the lawn is being established. So, and that's probably a good thing because a lot of times fertilizers are mixtures of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and people just apply a fertilizer and they put the phosphorus on, say, even if they don't need it. Maybe they need it for the nitrogen, but they don't need it for the phosphorus. So then the solution to that is then to apply a fertilizer that provides nitrogen but does not contain phosphorus.
But you have to know if that's the way you should go. Not all of us are that knowledgeable. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. I thank you so much for being on our show for today's Food Friday. Please explain. Harold Van Es, professor in the Department of Crop and Soil Sciences at Cornell University. It's been a real pleasure having you on our show.
My pleasure as well, Leonard.